This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Oprah's support for Obama angers some of her fans, and evangelist Juanita Bynum's estranged husband makes a public apology. We've got that and more for our bloggers' roundtable. Joining us today, Earl Dunavant, creator of the blog Prometheus 6, also Issa Yulin of IssaYulin.com, and Anthony Bradley, who blogs at the Institute. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
So we've got Oprah Winfrey. She's been giving Senator Barack Obama a boost in the polls, and she went out on the campaign trail. It was like a sold-out arena tour, but some of her viewers are giving her heck on her own website for throwing her weight behind Obama. One post on Winfrey's site read, "She has crossed a line and lost my trust completely." Some have even accused the Queen of Talk of siding with Obama just because he's black. So, Issa, are you surprised by how strongly some of her fans have come out and just said, I hate this?
I am. It's so tired and old, Farai. I thought we were past all this. It's kind of like the abolitionists versus the suffragists, or civil rights versus feminism in the second wave. It's just ridiculous, actually. You know, Oprah is not their mammy. That stereotype is over. And she's an intelligent, well-read black woman who happens to comfort women and offer them joy. But she's also a citizen of the United States, and she has every right to get excited about this campaign and to advocate. In fact, I would say that it's her responsibility as a citizen to do so.
Anthony, I remember last go-round for the presidential elections, she was actually criticized by some people for having President George W. Bush on and for seeming, in their minds, too cozy. Can she not win this one?
Well, she really can't, because I think what we're finding is that Oprah's fans are showing their true colors. I think that one of the posts on the site said that Oprah has shown her true colors because she's determined to help ride the affirmative action race card all the way to the White House. And I think what we find is that Oprah's fans are primarily middle-class white women who are looking to Hillary Clinton as their hero. And so as long as she supports someone other than Hillary Clinton, she's probably going to get backlash. But given her position, as long as she supports anyone with her large fan base, she's going to get some static.
So, Earl, what should she do? I mean, if you were her advisor, as she is one of Obama's advisors, what would you tell her to do?
I tell her to ignore it. I do not believe, frankly, that most of those people are her fans. Example, IMIS's issues, okay? There is a guerrilla marketing firm that has been tracking blog posts because they came to my site. I was somewhat harsh on the gentleman. And they linked them into a special Yahoo Corp report pipes, and they just pull down all the blog reports. And if they see something hostile, they go to comment on it. This is the sort of thing that's going on with Oprah and her website. I do not believe those people are her fans. I believe they are people who are trying to challenge Obama. Okay. And the fact is, the Obamas are personal friends of hers. If they're saying that endorsing a personal friend is playing black against white, then you're telling me that the rule is that a black person has to endorse a white person first or exclusively? None of that holds. She's an individual. She's got a lot of money, but she does get to endorse her friends.
Let me ask Issa about this, because, Earl, I want to talk to you a little bit more about these techniques that you're talking about on the web of tracking opinions. But, Issa, do you think that it's wrong to endorse someone because they're black if you believe it's a groundbreaking move in politics? Is that wrong?
I don't think that race is really a factor here. It's obviously a factor. It's everything that's going on. But I think that Oprah has chosen to support Barack Obama because he really believes that he represents new leadership. She didn't choose to advocate for Al Sharpton. She didn't choose to advocate for Jesse Jackson. She's chosen Barack Obama. And quite frankly, she didn't choose to support publicly Bill Clinton. I think that she's thought long and hard. And I think that, again, as an American citizen, it's her right and indeed her responsibility in a participatory democracy. If she gets excited about a candidate, she should come forward and advocate on their behalf. And we've got to get away from this sort of polarizing, negative discourse in the public realm. We've got to stop being afraid to talk about who we support as a candidate, whether it's, you know, on the campaign or around the holiday dinner table. That's what we're supposed to do as Americans in a participatory democracy. So I look at her as a role model for the rest of America.
Anthony, do you think some of this has to do with the difference between a journalist and a talk show host? Because recently we had Carol Simpson on talking about how, as a retired journalist, she could for the first time say her preference. Her preference happens to be Hillary Clinton. So do you think it's that some people are saying, well, you know, last time she had the candidates on to talk and that seemed like a journalistic move, and now as a talk show host, she's playing a somewhat different role? Do you think that's a factor? You know what? We're going to have to go back to Anthony in a second. Earl, let me ask you to talk a little bit more about what you were saying with these techniques, that essentially it sounds like one thing that happens in the blogosphere is that people are able to search out different opinions and then to track them specifically. Tell me about the technology that you're talking about.
Okay, the simplest way is just the blog search that Google runs. It tags every Google blog, every blog that ever linked Google to any blogger blog, and anybody that ever linked to it. And you can go in and put in any phrase you want, and they'll come back with blog posts specifically. Okay? There's other technology, Technorati. These are things that, if you're a blogger, you are aware of them, you use these services. Yahoo has expanded on that. What they've done is make it easy for people to create custom reports from their blog feed across the internet. So, and it runs on a scheduled basis. Now, I look at my stats and I see who is coming to my site from where. It shows you the guy that referred to you. So I'll go back and I'll have conversations with people by tracing them backwards through my stats. And this is how I found out about the Yahoo Pipes special reports for the IMUS. There are three copies of them out there. There are three people who have been tracking them just prior to his return to the air. And this is a pretty straightforward thing to do with Yahoo now. So you've got the custom reports from Yahoo, you've got the blog search, you've got Technorati, you've got myriad blog services that, you know, what would be another good one?
It sounds like the main point is that people are really tracking each other. And Anthony, what about the whole question of the role that the blogosphere is playing in the presidential election? I mean, this is, you know, I've seen, oddly enough, I was driving down one of the big shopping streets in Los Angeles, and a store had, and this is a clothing store, had Year of the Blog all over its windows. I have no idea what that referred to. But if they can say Year of the Blog, I'm sure that in the political sphere, this is really being talked about. How important are blogs in the political world right now?
It's absolutely changed everything. I think what we see now that we haven't seen in previous elections is that regular folks are able to blog their opinions and other people listen. And each political candidate in their campaigns know this. And so many of them are going directly to blogs, directly to the internet, to promote and present their message, because bloggers are actually changing the way journalism is done and the way these campaigns are covered.
Now, I just want to reintroduce our topic and our guest. You are listening to NPR's News and Notes. I am Farai Chidea, and with me on today's Bloggers Roundtable is Earl Dunavant, creator of the blog Prometheus 6, also Issa Yulin of IssaYulin.com, and Anthony Bradley from the blog The Institute. Issa, I'm going to get you to kick things off for this. This is such a soap opera. So Juanita Bynum and Bishop Thomas W. Weeks were one of the dynamic duos of evangelical Christianity, but this past August, she accused her husband and fellow minister of beating and choking her in a hotel parking lot. Now, Bishop Weeks wrote a tell-all book that uses examples from their marriage to help other people with their relationships. It's called What Love Taught Me. But he recently yanked the book off the shelves after appearing on the Tom Joyner Show to promote the book. 2 days after that interview, Bishop Weeks also made a public apology to Bynum via an online video, and he said in this interview he emotionally hurt Bynum, but he pulled it off the website. So if you can keep track of all that, do you think that he is being opportunistic? Is this a sincere apology? What's going on here? Because a lot of people follow these two.
Yeah, and I think it's unfortunate that this private incident has become so public and so salacious. I'm frankly getting really tired of it. I look forward to reading Deneen Milner's second part in her Essence article on Juanita Bynum, her interview with her. But after that, I really kind of want to be done with this whole thing. I think that it's important for both of them to kind of step back and get really, really quiet and figure out what's going on within themselves that has led to this level of domestic violence. I think that, unfortunately, all of the public discourse around this incident has trivialized what really is a misogynist attack on a black woman in a public space. None of the conversations are about this real issue of violence in our community. And so if they were prepared to kind of get quiet and then come forward in the future and launch a discussion about misogyny, about violence, about domestic abuse, I'd be on board. But this just sounds from both sides like a lot of profiteering.
Anthony, you teach at a theology school. There have been a lot of posts, speaking of the blogosphere, which we are here, that say that she is somehow at fault. Do you think that that is a sign of misogyny in the church, or is it just people picking their favorites?
Well, the great tragedy of this, of course, is we have the blend of sex, money, and power. And if you listen to both Juanita and Bishop Weeks speak about the situation, what's most sad is that this very private matter is being argued in front of the public. And so we actually are completely unaware and uncertain about the truth. It's really he said, she said. And so we're in this great morass of accusation, and we don't have a lot of clarity. And that's really the great tragedy of this.
But do you think it sounds as if some of the people have already judged her? They've been the judge and jury. I'm sure other people have judged him. But when you think about a woman saying that she was choked and beaten, and then you think about people going online and saying that she's the one at fault, does that seem like a very gender-based or a church-based rushed judgment? Should other people, I mean, in fact, make a judgment about the church based on the reaction to her?
Well, you know, what's really been said, if you follow some of the posts on several websites, is that there's almost the assumption that what she is saying is wrong and that Bishop Weeks couldn't possibly be capable of something like this. And the accusations of abuse are serious and they need to be investigated. And we've seen histories of women being abused by men in the church and the church defending men. But we shouldn't take from that, of course, that it's the church that has some sort of consistent dysfunction. But we do have a problem with men in power and how that power is played out both in their homes and in their marriages and also in their church context that need to be challenged.
Now, Earl, what about this whole book issue? He had this book, he's renamed it now, What Love Taught Me Only. He's gone on and off the media trying to promote it and then saying he won't. And if you go to his website, you'll actually see a sign that says he'll refund everyone's money who's pre-ordered the book or who's ordered the book. What are we to make of the financial side of all this? Is this, you know, and both of them continuing to talk about this, is this profiteering?
I think so. I tried my best not to pay any attention to this at all, to be totally honest. But from what I've seen here, I think there's like this huge emotional outburst. The book was part profiteering, but there was a lot of just revenge on smearing my name involved with that. I'm just going to open up and dump all this stuff. And then he pulls it back, and that, I believe, is profiteering, because I do not believe his church is successful as hers. I mean, she's the older of the couple, which made her maybe more dominant. I don't know. But it strikes me like her church is still thriving and his is starting to struggle. And I think that there was a lot of that involved in withdrawing the book.
Issa, just briefly, what lessons, if any, should people draw from this?
Don't put your business in the street.
Yes.
Amen.
Do what your mama taught you.
That's always good advice. Earl, Issa, Anthony, thanks again.
Okay.
Thanks for
Thank
writing.
You.
We've been speaking with Issa Yulin, who blogs at her website, IssaYulin.com, also Earl Dunavant, the creator of the blog Prometheus 6, and Anthony Bradley, who blogs at The Institute. He joined us from KWMU in St. Louis, and Issa joined us from our NPR studios in New York.